Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Poppin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
Well, here we are, Dom. What's top of mind these days?
Well, it's got to be Halloween for me, man. Halloween's this upcoming weekend, and I live downtown Phoenix, and so it's been quite the fun watching people already walking around downtown in costumes and outfits, already kind of getting in the spirit. Again, it just kind of reminds you of what things were before last year, right?
Yeah, so, that's a great point. I was watching people right to hear us talk about sports, but I was watching a game, and all the people at the bar, and it's, still a few days early and they're all dressed up, but and acting like there's nothing going on with COVID. So
yeah,
that's a good point. Probably let's get to our guests. So how do you know Dan? Who do we have?
So we've got Dan Gutwein from Intel. He's director of the N50 program, which I know we'll hear more about, but obviously digital equity has been a big focus in Arizona. And for me, we can't have an economy that works for some and not for all, especially now that it's digital. We've got a huge focus in economic development around connecting the unconnected and ensuring everyone has access. Dan is doing some incredible work in the digital equity space. I'm sure everyone heard the Intel announcement about the $20 billion investment in Arizona. And so I was connected into Dan because of all the incredible digital equity and inclusion work that he's working on that we'll hear about. And so now we're working closely together in Arizona to try to bridge the digital divide and make sure everyone has access to the internet. So it's going to be great. Have you met Dan before?
We met. We have the picture. We were all together in the suite. The game. I don't know as much as the story as you do. We had a quick couple of discussions. So I'm just excited to hear him. Should we get him on?
Yeah, it should be great. Let's bring him in.
Let's do it.
Yep.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Dan, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining.
Ah, it's good to be here, Chris. Thanks to you and Dom for having me.
Yeah, that should be fun. I know that we got some time in over a little football, and so now let's dig in. Let the world know what you're up to. Before we dig into some of the most recent stuff, though, like N50 and your innovation, we found that our audience likes to know who our guests are. So just start a little bit about you. Let the podcast audience know what you want them to know about you. Just start there.
About me? Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Dan Gutwein. I've been doing this, for like 30 years, which blows my mind, just in the tech field. And,
working no changes in that time, I'm sure.
None at all. None whatsoever. No, I started my career off, just in the ad space and in the agency business, and realized pretty quickly on after college that, there was not a lot of money to be made at my level in that space. So I moved into tech, and I worked for AT&T for a number of years in their networking group. I went off, did my own things, a couple little startups, and then I got pulled in by Intel, and I was going to work for Intel. My plan was to work for Intel for 2 years, and here I am almost 18 years later. But part of the reason is because I get to do really cool, exciting things this company. They've got a lot of really cool innovation arms that they're working on that a lot of people don't hear about that I get to not only see, but actually able to work on every day. And so I've been doing that for a while. And then, we'll talk about this a little bit later too. Just got involved, actually ran a nonprofit for a number of years kind of on the side. and got involved with just, you know, building computer labs and things around the world, which really kind of piqued my interest. Is how do you kind of merge technology and kind of that, you know, human good kind of factor as well. And I think that's what keeps me going. I mean, I love doing that and just seeing how, you know, people's lives can be changed through what we do for a living, right?
Yeah.
Which is really cool. So,
yeah.
I like to think I'm still like 25, but I don't know, man.
Well, if you're doing it 30 years, that might be challenging, but
maybe the math just doesn't add up, right?
Nope.
I love it. So that's a good background. So agent or, you know, ad agency, then tech, then nonprofits. So, you know, Dan, it's a podcast about smart cities. This is one of our most fun questions, is asking our guests what their definition of a smart city is and kind of seeing how their background kind of influences their perspective on smart cities. So we'd love to hear, you know, what's your perspective of smart cities? What do you see is working? What do you see is not working? Let us know.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's an interesting question, Dom. And look, and I'm not a smart cities expert. There are people that know a lot more about like smart cities than I do, right? But we do have a smart cities group here at Intel, and I know those folks pretty well, and they're brilliant. But I mean, think about like a smart city, right? It's this interconnected city, right? So you've got, you know, pervasive, you know, kind of like wireless kind of technology. You know, you've got open data that people can actually analyze and make decisions based on it. You know, you've got security in there. So you've got, you know, devices that aren't, you know, doing bad things, right? You've got some flexible kind of applications and monetization models, you know, for the city. You know, that's what a smart city is, right? And then you can determine, I always ask, like, when does a city become smart? Right? It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the age old question, like how much money is enough? Well, just another dollar. I mean, when does the city become really smart? When you say, okay, now we're smart. And that's been always something that always sits in the back of my mind, you know, and I'm not representing Intel when I say that. I'm just representing my own personal kind of curiosity. Oh. Is that when do you say, man, this is it? I mean, you know, I mean, when your water meters are communicating 24/7, 365, and your parking spots are communicating with your automobile and all of this, when does it say, hey, this is really smart?
Yeah.
I don't know that we know the answer to that question, but I think that's kind of like, you know, those kind of four things, you know, you have to have, and then you continue to build applications on that enhance the lives of that community. And in particular, the lives of those citizens.
Yeah. Right?
But I'm always challenged. And this again is kind of what I do for, you know, living here at Intel too. I'm always challenged when, you know, it seems like, you know, your parking meter is smarter than your citizens sometimes when it comes to technology. Right. And if they're communicating, but your citizens can't, I think, you know, it's hard to say we're a smart city if your people aren't interacted with it. But
yeah, that's
my non-technical definition, Dom.
No, I absolutely love it. I mean, I think you hit on a lot of what our previous guests has hit on. And this fact is, you know, you're not going to wake up one day and just be smart. It's a journey. It's a process.
Yeah.
And ultimately, like you mentioned, to improve the quality of life. But I thought what you ended on was something very powerful and something I've always thought about. It's like, you can't have a smart city without, you know, smart, intelligent, connected people, right? Your cities are built on people. So that's a perfect segue into what you're doing today with the N50 project. And so give our audience a high level overview of what is the N50 project?
Yeah, no, thanks for that, Dom. And that's what I love talking about. And, you know, where, you know, hopefully I'm not super smart when it comes to like smart cities. Like, we've been diving into this topic with, you know, connecting people for, in my own personal experience now about, you know, over a decade, and kind of, you know, really kind of full-time this N50 project in the last, you know, kind of couple of years we've been incubating it. But the N50 project, it stands for the next 50. So N50 stands for the next 50% of the world that currently today does not participate in our digital space. And so, you know, we look at that, and you can do the math pretty easily and say there's somewhere between 3.1 and 3.89 billion people that don't participate in the digital world like the three of us are doing right now and all your listeners are, right? That's a digital space. And so we put this project together, and we've really started to dive into things like, okay, you know, why? And so for a couple of years, we've dug into this, and COVID actually, you know, had us kind of put things on pause for a while and really, really look at the situation, because it basically exposed it to the world. And you can see this happening through some of our federal government infrastructure bills, you know, and the funding that they're putting out there for broadband and connectivity, and certainly some emergency funds to get actually technology in the hands of people. But it exposed a massive problem that's not just global, Dom. Mm. is actually here in the States. And so we say in the States now, there's still 34 plus or minus million Americans that aren't participating in the digital world. And so we started digging into that and saying, okay, why? I mean, we've had technology out there. We've spent billions of dollars on the age old phrase of connect the unconnected, right? You talk about an overused term. That's an overused term. And I would argue that there's not a spot on this planet, if you had the means, that you couldn't pick up a phone and make a call, right? Some sort of satellite call of some sort. And so we started digging back to, is it really a connectivity issue? If it were, Dom, I think it'd be really easy to solve. You just go out and put more. I mean, we got 5G now, right? Just start dropping towers, and we've got our great partners that are doing that. And so we worked with some folks like the GSMA who came back and said it's not so much a connectivity issue, some other issues. They actually project now that, and I'm not the exact number, I think it's like 91 or 92% of the world actually has access to connectivity, but they, again, 50% don't use it. And so we started digging into, okay, why is that? And it came back to really four reasons. The first reason were just applications. Like, don't even know what to go do. And again, some of the developing parts of the world, but even in some of our rural areas in the U.S. and even in our urban areas in the U.S., applications that really kind of enrich their lives, right? That add value to, that you're willing to actually spend money on to utilize. And then the next, like, biggest issue was literacy. You know, I mean, we're working with people that have never turned a computer on before. And we're expecting them to go out and use some of these applications. Oh, and by the way, in a COVID world, you can't call your IT person to come and fix the problem, right? So it's, you know, these massive problems, like literacy, digital literacy was a huge issue. And then certainly, language in some parts of the world is impacting this, though, you know, there's a lot of tools now that can actually overcome some language barriers, and then cost, you know, cost is certainly a major issue as well. So those four things. So the next 50 is really all about how do we focus on participation, not just connectivity. And so we put together this alliance, and this is not, you know, Intel owned. We're going to pound our chest and say, look what we're doing around the world. What we found is like every company, particularly in our tech space, has an initiative around, you know, gaining participation from people in the world. And so we put together an alliance that just said, hey, one company cannot do this all. If you think you can, go for it. But we believe no one company can do it all. And we found that all these companies were focusing on what they know best when it comes to solving this problem, which could be, you know, the device, or could be the network, it could be the application, or they're an NGO trying to solve certain issues. So we brought the Next 50 project together as an alliance of companies, cross-industry, tech, non-tech, you know, nonprofit, for-profit, private enterprise, and so on, and said, let's go solve this problem together in a holistic manner from an end-to-end solution to make sure we're actually driving real value.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. I mean, it's such a powerful initiative. You know, I'm just excited to see you get it up and off the ground, and of course, then, you know, continue to partner with you here in Arizona. So let's dig into this topic of participation, because I think it's kind of new. It'll be new to a lot of our listeners, city managers, mayors. So, you know, this idea of, you know, people have access, but they choose not to maybe participate because there's not a reason to. Can you maybe provide an example, a story of why participation and these human enriching applications are so important?
Yeah, I mean, I can provide a ton of just examples and just experiences we've had at this as well. But, you know, people will learn how to use technology. They will get online and they will spend in what we would consider probably, you know, an unbalanced amount of their income to actually pay for connectivity if it adds value, if it adds value. And so, you know, I'm just thinking of a story. I can tell you a story back, and it was like probably 10, 11 years ago now. We were working with through a nonprofit I was just kind of volunteering with. We're working through with FK Day and the World Bicycle Relief. Great organization, by the way. And we were working in an extremely rural area in southern Zambia. No power, no running water. I mean, certainly no computer labs, right? And we were doing this bicycle kind of drive with World Bicycle Relief and FK Day, and it's really cool. And so after we did this bicycle drive, we decided we're going to go out. Let's just go ride with these bikes. Right? Let's go check out this community. And so we ended up riding like for a couple of hours and came across this little hut. We had a little translator with us, and this lady spoke Tongan, which is the language there. And we kind of went to this hut, and we're sitting out with this guy for about 20, 30 minutes just listening to his life. And it was fascinating, right? Just fascinating. It's a curiosity in me, just went crazy. And all of a sudden, about 30 minutes out of the blue, like this cell phone rings. in this dude's hut. It's like a mud hut, grass roof, just like you'd expect when you've seen the pictures. This cell phone rings. And it was that old Nokia ring, if you guys remember that. I know you guys remember that. Yeah. The old da na na da na na da na na. And I'm sitting there with a couple of my buddies, you know, who helped with
the bicycle. Did you check your pocket?
Yeah, I did. Like, what's going on here? And, you know, I mean, at first I'm like, are we being punked? You know, like, is there a camera? We're going to get $100. Because it was so odd and so out of the norm. We were so rural. We're in such a rural, rural, rural area. And this cell phone rings. And this guy answers the phone and he talks for a few minutes and he hung up and he came back like nothing was up. And so we kind of wrapped up as we're riding our bikes away from this guy's house. I stopped saying, hey, I've got to ask some questions, right? This is my Western mind and what I'm thinking. Like, what's up with the cell phone? And the interpreter had no idea. She's like, why are you even asking this? Like, what do you mean, what's up with the cell phone? And she went on to tell me that he was a fisherman. And the call that he took that rang in on his phone was from the docks, which were a few hours away. And they were telling him when they would be there to buy fish so that he could actually be down there to fish and to sell his fish.
Wow.
And I'm just like, my mind just exploded. I'm like, wow. And see, that now that's value, right? And so I began to ask her, I said, well, how much does he make in a year? How much does his phone cost? And in this part of the world, they use top-up programs, right? So he takes a SIM card and goes to a little hut in the community and tops it up and gives them a few dollars. And she said, on average, he probably spends $4 to $5 a month, right? And the guy probably makes $300 to $350 a year in income.
Wow.
And so you think about it, this guy's spending 20% of his income to charge his phone. And but for her, she said, Dan, she said he wouldn't be able to make that money if it weren't for that communication device.
Or worse, he'd waste his entire day if for some reason they weren't going to be at the dock buying fish and he went anyways. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So it's
a productivity engine. Yeah.
Exactly. So when we talk about applications, right, and we talk about smart cities, right, these applications make your community smart. This guy is much smarter than he was before the phone, right, because he knew what was going on. He had information. And now you take that to every farmer, right, who is growing crop, has information when buyers are coming. And the buyers have information as to what's the quality of the crop, what's the sustainability piece look like. Now you're, I mean, really, that's what it's about is, I mean, connecting people and applications should be about providing information that enrich their lives. Just like you're connecting cities and, you know, my car now knows where the parking spot is open. Why does my car have more information than I do? That's where I'm kind of going with this whole
thing. Totally. So. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's just such a powerful, that's such a powerful story because a lot, you know, oftentimes you jump immediately into the, oh, it's just simply because they can't afford it. They can't afford it. It's, well, you can provide them. And if there's no reason for them to use it, if there's no enriching application, the purpose for them to use it, they're still not going to adopt it and leverage it. So and, I think that's just powerful.
Yeah, and you talk about digital literacy and like, cause in my mind I went, okay, how's this guy charge his phone? Like, how do we even get a network out here? Right. And by the way, like I said, there's coverage all over the place now, you know, as far as just network providers have done, our MNO friends have done a great job of just, you know, providing, there's still areas that we're improving on that. You're seeing some of their initiatives now. But, you know, this guy actually charged his cell phone on an old car battery in his hut. I'm like, this is phenomenal. Wow. So anyway, I mean, that's just one example of many, 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 you know, that we're seeing as far as just enriching the lives of people is really what it's about.
Exactly. And I think that's the bottom line and that's the ultimate goal. That's just incredible. So, but, you know, so Dan, talk to us about, you know, obviously this is a major challenge, major focus for governments. But talk to us about why is it a major focus for Intel? Why is Intel kind of bought into this idea? And why maybe do you think other private companies should really focus on, you know, bridging this digital divide and connecting the next 50?
Yeah, no, and that's a really good question, Dom, too. And trust me, I've been asked that more than once, even internally, too. Dan, why are we doing this? Right? So, by the way, I mean, so, you know, so I want to address it in just really three areas, right? I mean, as our core purpose at Intel, and you can go on our website and check this out. Right? It's to develop technology that enriches the lives of every person on earth. And I think for the past 52, 53 years, we've done an amazing job as an organization. I love this company and what we've done, but we've only brought that benefit to half the world.
Mm.
Right. And so, you know, when you look at the companies that we have built and you say, hey, I mean, look, half the world has never Googled anything.
Wow.
Imagine that. Right. So, all I have to say, it's in our purpose, right, as a company. So we should be driving for that. And I love that purpose. But also, you know, when you think about it, there's a lot of opportunity out there for companies if they can bring on 3.1 to 3.9 billion new subscribers and users and information people, right?
Yep.
So there is a business opportunity. People say, oh, you're doing great things. Well, there's also revenue opportunity behind that for every company in this space as well. And that's not really why we're doing it. But, you know, and then I would also say this too, like, why should other people care? I mean, look at all the problems we have in this world, right? And let's just say that I had 10 of the smartest people in the world, but I'm only going to use half of you to help me solve my problem. That's what we've done. That's what we've done. And so what's interesting is when you start working with these unconnected, you start listening to them. We did an application, Dom. We worked with the ATU, the African Telecom Union out of Johannesburg for the last couple of years. We ran an entrepreneur competition. Like the first place prize, I think, was like $5,000. And we had over 113 entrepreneurs submit applications that passed the first round.
Wow.
I mean, and these are creative things. And I always say these are creative local entrepreneurs developing local applications to solve local problems that the three of us would have never thought about before. And that's what I think, like, you know, I mean, look, people want to talk about, you know, climate issues and stuff like that. I'm like, why don't we ask the rest of the world? Maybe there's someone out there that knows how to solve this. I don't know, you know, but that's where I think, you know, from it's a core purpose of why most of our companies exist. There's a ton of revenue opportunity out there as well. And by the way, from a benefit perspective, I'm really curious as what the rest of the world knows. And I think we all should be.
Yeah, I really, really like that idea of we're missing out. We're not leveraging the collective intelligence of the world. No. If half the world's not connected, if we're not even engaging half the world in this digital life we all live now, that's, I love it. So, you know, Dan, you talked about that N50s, it's an alliance of partners. Talk to us about some of the partners that you're starting to connect with and bring on board.
Yeah. So, I mean, and by the way, Dom, we launched this maybe 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Early days.
So we have some great, great large companies, you know, but large companies also have large legal systems. So we're asking them to sign an MOU. So it's kind of pending through that. So some of those I can't speak directly to yet, but they're right on the edge of any second now. We're in a, you know, they've given us the verbals we're in. But some very large, you know, technology companies and providers are joining this. Some decent MNOs, when I say that, you know, your carriers, your of the world. I'm hesitant to mention names because some of these agreements aren't quite done yet. Even some phenomenal academic institutions, you know, that we've got that are joining or have already joined. So really, we look at it in four different pillars. You know, you've got your public kind of space where you've got, you have to work with, you know, in our country, obviously your states, your counties, your cities, your towns, municipalities. Thank you. And we also have NGOs, phenomenal NGOs we're working with that have amazing applications, anything from literacy, how to an education application, healthcare applications, you know, agriculture applications, entrepreneur applications. And then you've got, you know, the private structure, right? I mean, your tech companies, your non-tech companies, we've got fintech companies that we're working with. So I can't like name like some specific names that I want to, but what I'd ask people to do is if you go to the N50project.org website, within the next couple of weeks, we'll be announcing kind of our founding partners there and you'll see all their logos. And I promise you, you'll recognize a bunch of those. It's a great, great organization of people. I can tell you this. Our goal was to have 5 plus or minus kind of partners on this by the end of the year. So we launched, you know, just in October this month. Our goal is to have 5 sign on by the end of the year. We've already got about 15.
Awesome. What, once again, the site is what?
N50 Projects, so N50project.org.
Projects, okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. And so everyone knows, like I said, that was kind of, the site is still, you know, a work in progress. So you're going to see a new enhancement, new pages coming on as we get those developed. And one of those pages is our partner page. And we're waiting on a couple of big logos to... Well,
given, I'm sure you've been playing this quite some time, and thanks for all the backstory. Hopefully this isn't also a question you can't answer, but my hunch is with it now being public two weeks, where do you think you'll focus the first projects and pilots. Can you talk to some of that? Because I'm guessing that's what's bringing the people together. That might help.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Chris, for steering me in that direction. So we do have a couple of pilots we're working on right now, and I'll just throw these out there, and I can actually name some names behind this too. Okay. So we have a pilot we're working on in rural Zambia. We wanted to figure out if we can do this in a really rural area, we can probably do this anywhere. And so our goal, by the way, at the N50 project is to create blueprints. Don, that you guys can use, your cities can use, and say, here's how we can go do it. And it also brings in the applications around it as well. So in rural Zambia, we're working with African Mobile Networks, MTN, an application called Mwabu, which has 5,000 lesson plans for basic school kids, 2,500 videos. Dell's a big partner in that particular space as well. Virtual doctors from a healthcare perspective. And we put together a really cool architecture, Chris, where, we'll create, put some of these applications at the edge and create almost like a private network for the community where they can access some of these applications for free, right, to become digitally literate. And so that's a pilot that will actually be installed this quarter. And we'll measure the participation increase over the next 6 to 12 months. And you can see videos and white papers on that. And then one I'm super excited about, it's actually right here in Arizona, which I'm so excited about it. It's working with the Welcome to America project. And so they've recently, they've got about 200 refugee families that they've settled. And by the way, many of these refugee families have never turned a computer on before. And so we've actually working with our friends over at Worldwide Technologies, WWT, and partners with Dell have provided some laptops for them to make them help them with the digital literacy piece of it, providing training programs with them, partnering with Arizona State University on English as a second language. And they've been just a fantastic partner on this and just several others to really measure. And we'll also help them with the networking piece as well. So again, another blueprint that we can actually put in there that says, that really helps them on the literacy piece of it, as well as some of the ESL pieces, English as a second language. And we're measuring again, do they actually integrate into our community better? Find jobs faster, become literate, is it more efficient by being able to have 24/7 kind of connectivity and learning abilities there. So that, and by the way, that's right here in Phoenix, guys. I mean, this is like, we have a couple hundred families right here in Phoenix, about 10 minutes from downtown Phoenix, who have never turned a computer on before, and they're not connected. They're part of the 3.1 to 3.9 billion people.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. I mean, you can't believe it sometimes when you hear about this, especially fifth largest city in the country right here in, central to downtown Phoenix. There's these communities that are struggling with this. I mean, and that's just also thanks to Intel for being such a great partner and giving back into this community.
Yeah. And I'm excited about that too, because, we've got about roughly 12,000 employees here in the Phoenix area. And so we actually sent out a note to our employee groups, said, hey, we're looking for 12 languages. So we can actually help them with one-to-one tutoring as they learn English as a second language. Within 24 hours, I had employees that spoke 12 different languages that volunteered to go help Welcome to America project. And yeah, I don't get political on it because I stay completely out of that, like y'all do that. But I mean, we ask these folks to actually become like self-sufficient. And I think it's like less than 6 months of coming to the U.S. And yet, how do you apply for a job online if you've never turned on a computer before?
Yeah.
It's just kind of a foreign country and you don't speak the language. So we're helping in that area, to help integrate and become sufficient as quickly as possible. And I think it's a really cool thing to do.
So Dan, don't worry. Nobody listens to our podcast anyways. We do like to get people to look out in the future, and no one's going to hold you accountable for what you're about to say, but what does success look like? Look out on the, tell us where this is going. If you're wildly successful, what do you think happens in 5 years from N50?
Yeah, it becomes the N40, the N30, the N20, and the N10.
Ah, that's a good point.
Is exactly what we're doing. And that's what we want to do. I mean, we want to listen, I started when I talk about, cities and smart cities. I mean, you have to have this open data kind of idea. Like we're having open blueprints.
Yeah.
And our goal is all around the world. People sit there and say, wait a minute, this worked in this area. This could work in my area. Yep. And we have these solution integrators just go crazy and almost create new ecosystems and new almost micro businesses in some of these communities where they'll take our blueprints and go out and copy exactly and start putting these networks with applications and literacy at cost-effective manners in all of these communities to actually, move this thing, move the needle a little bit on this, Chris. And so our goal right now, honestly, I actually just submitted this to our team this past week. is by the end of 2022, there's no reason why we shouldn't have 100 plus partners engaged in the N50 project.
Awesome.
And we should be in hundreds of communities where blueprints are just being generated and these blueprints work and they're duplicated over and over again. Nice. And by the way, when we're wildly successful, we'll have no idea what's going on, right? This is what wildly successful means is people are just downloading blueprints, implementing those blueprints, and we'll hear about it 6 months from now. We just implemented one of your blueprints in this community in the Amazon. Yeah. And another 300 people are connecting and participating in the digital world. That's success for us.
Yeah, that it's so awesome because I mean, the hardest part for cities or communities is just getting started sometimes. I mean, we just launched the National Smart Communities Consortium Group. It's bringing us like 7 of the smart region initiatives together from across the country. And it's just because of that, because if we can learn from each other and one does something, we can implement, yeah, you know, what they started. It's sometimes just getting started is the hardest part. So I absolutely love this idea of blueprints and making it open and accessible to communities across the globe.
Yeah. Well, Dom, if we don't do that, what your communities are going to start doing is they're going to go out and just start dropping more and more connectivity. We're going to upgrade from 4G to 5G and all this great stuff. In 10 years now, we're sitting and go, hey, why is 50% of the world still not participating?
Right. Yep. Exactly. Such a good point. Awesome.
So how can folks get involved? Like, how can the partners, cities, organizations, how they join? What do you need?
Chris, the best question. Thanks. I appreciate it. Now, go to n50project.org, and there's a button there called Join. Join the movement, folks. I mean, this is what it's about. And it's like I said, it's not about one company. It's about all of us coming together to go solve this problem. And it's focusing holistically and end-to-end. So if you're a fintech company, an ag company, a health company, an education company, a smart cities, or I mean, anything, tech company, you should be part of this. There's room for you in this as well. If you're an NGO that has an application, there's room for you this. And if you're an academic institution, there's room for you this as well. One company can't do it. It's going to take all of us together collectively focusing on this holistic solution. That's what we have to go do. Go to n50project.org and join, or send me an email, you know, daniel.gutwein, daniel.gutwein@intel.com. And let's have a conversation as to how you can best participate.
That's great. We'll be sure to post this on when it goes live.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we normally ask two standard questions, but I kind of think I know the answer to one of them. We ask, how can we do, what can we do to help more? And people are listening. What should they do? I think you just had them answer it right there. N50projects.org and get on board. But is there anything else that we can do as you think through knowing us, knowing what the podcast, other than getting the podcast out and social media to help spread the word?
Yeah, I can keep doing what you guys are doing. I mean, you guys have been such great partners so far in helping us, you know, particularly like what we're doing here in the state. And, you know, we will need more and more like communities, like pilots, or not pilots even, because, you know, you kind of go beyond the pilot stage at some point. And so that's where, like, if you know a community, and we have over 500 tribal reservations just here in the States, many of them lack participation. If you're working with them, if you're working with towns, it doesn't even have to be rural. Send us those communities, Chris, Dom, send us those communities and say, hey, here's communities. Do you have a blueprint for it? We'll get you a blueprint for it. We'll get you the partners that can actually go help install it. We'll get you the applications that can drive the participation piece behind it. That's what we're looking for, and that's how people can help.
That's great.
How about we also know, as Dom and I work together, you can't do this stuff alone. And we found that just learning about who has been an influential part is an important piece to our guests. So is there anyone you've been particularly appreciative about? And usually, if there's a fit, knowing about the Urban Complex and about us, let us know if you think they'd be a good fit for being on the show. But anyone you want to give a shout out to?
You know, I mean, I can give a shout out to so many people, and this is always a tricky one, Chris, because I'm going to miss somebody. but wait, the two of you guys have been fantastic. And I think just your help and guidance and leading, how do we form this, has just been great as well. I'll tell you what else is interesting is Lev Gonick over at Arizona State University. When I first started this project about 3 years ago, I was researching just communities and connecting the unconnected. And this guy's name popped up, this Lev guy's name popped up. And well, this guy's interesting. He did this in the city of Cleveland, right? He's in Cleveland and has a great article. And I watched this entire kind of show on this, and it was amazing. And then I started researching, like, this dude's in Tempe. He's like 15 minutes from me. This is before COVID. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, he's, you know, I think he's a CIO at ASU. And I'm like, he'll never meet with me. But I sent him a note and said, hey, here's this project we're incubating. I'd like some advice and direction. Can you help? And he's like, absolutely. When can you meet? And so I sat down and had coffee with him. And he was really instrumental in just helping us guide some of these guiding principles as far as, you know, how do you make this open? How do you get people involved? You know, how do you attract, you know, participation pieces of it? And it was just fantastic. And then, you know, all the work from all of our tech partners in this space that have helped guide us, you know, whether it's a telco or our friends over at Dell, and just, you know, how do we set this up to where it's attractive for people to join?
I meant know that love guy.
Love guy, I'm telling you. But again, I mean, you know, that's what we need is we need people who have done this before, you know, and we need really passionate people too, like a Mike Sullivan over the Welcome to America project.
Yeah.
That's just like, hey, how can we best utilize the tools that the N50 project is going to bring to the table, right? Exactly. Fantastic. So, and again, I mean, you guys, Dom, you seem to know everybody, and certainly in the state of Arizona, but probably in the West, and Chris as well, and just the resources you guys have brought to the table too, and your partnership has just been so good. Yeah. And I really, really appreciate it. Even getting the message out on this podcast has been fantastic, guys. Thank you.
It's been great. We look forward to making it a success and finally getting down to N1, maybe.
It'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Like, I mean, literally, the goal of this is to put us out of business, this whole project. Exactly. Like, we don't want to do this. We don't want to do this forever, right? It's got to start, you know, working its way down towards the N1, and then it's like, okay, they're going to come on board.
Right on. Well, with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Dan Gutwein, Director of Incubation Projects and the N50 Initiative, soon to be N40, N30, N20, N1 at Intel. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. See ya.
The Greater Phoenix Economic Council, known as GPEC, was named the top economic development organization in the U.S. in 2020. As a data-driven regional organization, GPEC serves as a strategic partner to companies across the world as they expand or relocate to other markets. Over the past 31 years, GPEC has fueled the Greater Phoenix economy by helping more than 850 companies and creating more than 154,000 jobs. Leaders in Greater Phoenix are building the nation's most innovative and connected smart region through the Connective. This community-driven applied research model deploys technology at scale. For more information about GPEC, visit gpec.org.
All right, Chris, Dan from Intel and the M50 project, man. What'd you think?
Where to start? Wow, yeah. N50, bold vision. Here we go. I think what's interesting to me, being at ASU and knowing what their charter and mission are really critical, and hearing what Intel's charter, I think, is where this all starts. We create world-changing technology that improves the life of every person on the planet. And that's got to be eye-opening for them if 50% of the planet isn't benefiting. Right? Because Intel's been around for a bit, even longer than Dan, who said he's been doing tech for 30 years. Intel, I think they've had over their 50-year anniversary. I could be wrong. But, and I think one of the things that resonated when I heard his four reasons that this hasn't happened, they don't know what they're going to do if they get connected. The literacy, computer literacy, someone never even turned on a computer, the language barriers and the cost. I think there's kind of a fifth one. I think part of the problem is for-profit companies, to make money, they don't want to invest in massive ways without a guaranteed rate of return. No. And I think the N50 realizes that there's so much benefit missing out on the world, but also, you know, it's not a selfish interest, but there's also a way that if they really create this space and they really create things, the whole market's going to change significantly too, but it's just a much different cycle. It's a lot like what we've seen with smart cities. These are hard things to shift a city from an old model to a completely new model and change the way they look at who they're serving. And I think the same thing is happening for profit companies that are trying to reach new customer base. It's systemic. There's a lot of things that have to be done to reach them in ways. And that's what strikes me, is that, wow, they're getting bold. They're going to make this happen. And hopefully Dan and Intel are the group that can pull it together. Cause we know from the things we try to do, it's definitely a noble cause and it can change lives.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a great point. And I think I'm slowly starting to see private industry flip that mindset, because there's two ways to increase profit or increase market share is you know, outbeat your competitors or grow the entire market, right? And so, especially with the likes of Amazon, right? You have half the population not ordering things online. You know, that's a big market that you're missing out on. Or think healthcare, right? If people aren't able to access telehealth and health services online, that means they're going to come in, fill up your emergency rooms, fill up your doctor's office, right? There's just such a benefit for so many sectors of our economy that everyone.
Well, really, and it can decrease the cost for everyone. If we leverage some of these new things. I mean, he talked about how COVID's changed the world. You know, it's accelerating these cycles, but yet there's still kind of this lack of connective tissue for 50% of the population. And so if you really want to get the economy to scale, you got to invest in a big way to make the shift. And he's right. Like, look at the U.S. government. Someone is up there lobbying in a big way to show that they can change the relationship into a digital relationship. And that's exciting. I mean, that's what you and I have been working on for cities for quite some time in other areas.
Yeah, it's just so much good stuff. There's so much I love about, you know, Dan and the N50 project. Just some high level. I mean, there's the focus on human-enriching applications, giving people a reason to participate, right? Because, hey, you've got a fiber into your rural household, but there's no reason to use it. Why would you use it, right? To be able to actually provide people with applications that matter to them, right, is, I think, a very important part that a lot of people aren't focusing on. And so that's why I think it's very exciting to see N50 really focus on what are the human enriching applications, education, health, remote services that are really going to drive people to adopt and participate in this new online economy. I thought that's incredible. And then I thought another powerful thing that he said is that I never really thought about is a lot of corporations and organizations talk about diversity of thoughts in like their boardroom and in their decision-making process. Think about the world. We're not leveraging 50% of the, you know, people to solve challenges. And that was incredibly eye-opening when he mentioned that to me.
Think of the Elon Musks we've missed because they weren't connected and couldn't see the world from a different lens because of where they were born and what they had available to them. People can be creative and come up with ways to change their whole industry, just like that fisherman did that he was referencing with just a phone.
And change your own local economy. What did he say? Local entrepreneurs developing local applications to solve local challenges, right? That's driving a local economy. Then finally, the blueprints. I don't need to talk about it more, but this idea of make it an open so we can all learn, we can all benefit, and we all can get going.
Yeah, we see that with our Cloud Innovation Center, and it's definitely something that works because if you can celebrate someone else's success, that reinforces or makes it quicker, even if it's not the same blueprint, makes it quicker to start. Huge win. You're right.
Yeah, such a great program. Again, Dan from Intel, N50 Project, N50Project.org. Go on there, join the cause, join us. Excited to work with them. So let's shift to cracks of the pavement. What article do you have for us this week?
Well, I found one that flows right into what Dan was talking about. It's called the Pandemic Silver Linings for Smart Cities. And the whole point, COVID opened the door for change, and there's going to be long-term changes there. A couple that they highlight. Well, obviously, the connectivity gap and what can change. But how about things like how do we pay attention to the community itself and public health? I think looking at the individual and how they're, we've heard a lot of folks talk about you can't have smart city without a healthy population, right? So that's one. Also, just focusing on the person itself, the constituency, I think is really critical. We've talked about this before, that if you don't focus at the citizen, you focus on the transaction of serving, you're kind of missing a whole piece. There's also the ability to connect everybody and increase the efficiencies and effectiveness of the services you're offering. We've seen that where people create a different way to reach out. And then just getting everything online. Again, we need to have the N50 happen because then you're missing some boats when you have better experiences online and people can't reach it. But just things are happening faster and things are being, people making these investments. Just exciting time. That's my takeaway.
Yeah, I think it's incredible. Something, you know, that Smart Cities Connect in DC last week, I was on a panel with David Graham, former CIO of San Diego, CIO now of Carlsbad, I think.
Carlsbad.
Anyway, he said that, you know, prior to COVID, when the IT department would deliver a solution, it was like, oh, that's a nice to have. It's cute. Yeah. Thanks for building me that.
That's cute.
Right. And now he says now it's a priority. It's not cute anymore. It's a business necessity, right? Yeah. Having all this stuff online. And he says, that's the shift we need to do. We can't have our business leaders say, oh, you know, that IT solution was, oh, that's just cute. It's a nice to have. No, it's now a necessity. It needs to be in the conversation. I just thought that when you said, you know, the pandemic has accelerated it, it's also shifted the mindset of people within local government, especially the business unit leaders, because of the necessity of it.
Those with a vision, they now have a leadership view and they can get people in. And if you can educate along the way, you can transform the city. And we see this time and time again.
Yep. So it's a great article. I love it.
Cool. All right. All that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, Smarter Cities for a Stronger Tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.